SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
A new week begins live right here on this Monday on Football Full Circle all across the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. He's the mastermind of the pigskin. That is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. On this Monday, we react to everything we saw week two and the Sunday slate. A jam-packed early window with 10 games kicking at 1 p.m. Eastern time. A little bit quieter throughout the Sunday afternoon slate with Sunday night football in Houston. But some marquee matchups, Lisi guy, all day long. In the story, at least early, underdogs not only just covering numbers, but winning outright. We saw three dogs of at least 6.5 points in the spread component win outright early on Sunday. Some monumental upsets to kick off week number two.
Yeah, and we talked about it. Baker Mayfield in Tampa Bay catching 7.5 was way too many points in regards to that divisional matchup. They went toe-to-toe in terms of the playoff game last year. And Baker Mayfield in Tampa Bay now 2-0. They stepped up not just offensively, but defensively. And then the other two games, Ben, in regards to that, we saw the Raiders and Gardner Minshew step up, baby. I mean, unbelievable. They were left for dead and buried, trailed in the second half by 10 points, and they pull it out yet again. And Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are 0-2. And then how about Sam Darnold? Old man Sam Darnold, 2-0, knocking off San Francisco, his former team. Those were the three biggest upsets in regards to week number two.
Not necessarily, though, Lisi guy. 6.5-point spread in Dallas. The Saints putting up 44 and looking like an absolute wagon. So far this season, in the first two weekends of the year, we have seen 8 teams be a 6-point underdog or greater on the spread. All of those 8 underdogs catching at least 6 or more are now 8-0 against the number. A lot to get into here. Let's start with those large upsets. The New Orleans Saints, the NFL's best scoring offense, after 47 points in the season opener, albeit against the Carolina Panthers, they back it up with 44 on the road in Dallas at the Star to snap a 16-game home regular season winning streak for the Cowboys. New Orleans walks into Jerry World and comes out with a perfect 2-0 start. 44-19, Joe, the victory for the Saints outright as a 6.5-point dog.
Yeah, and it wasn't Derek Carr so much as the physicality of the offensive line, right? Alvin Kamara with over 100 yards, 3 touchdowns on the ground, just a dominant performance. And then the turnovers. That defense was opportunistic against Bryce Young in week number one. They get 2 interceptions against Dak Prescott, short fields. And again, Dallas has many question marks, Ben. I mean, you know, the inability to step up against better competition, whether it be at home or on the road, is an Achilles heel for this team, a weakness that Mike McCarthy and Jerry Jones have to answer. But I'll tell you right now, in regards to the NFC contenders, very impressed with Dennis Allen and the New Orleans Saints through 2 weeks.
Almost the overlooked team, Lisi guy, in the NFC South, Kirk Cousins and the Atlanta Falcons, who we'll get to on this Monday night to end out week number two in Philadelphia, were the odds-on favorite. Okay, you're not looking at the preseason favorite. How about the 3-time reigning divisional champs in Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers, who we'll get to in just a moment? New Orleans was that up-and-coming team, at least based on perception. Last year in the offseason, with the acquisition of Derek Carr, the odds-on favorites that never really reached that goal. Early in the season, it was because of a stagnant offense, but the Saints did actually find their footing offensively toward the end of last season, finishing as a top 10 scoring offense, averaging better than 23.5 points per game. There is no better scoring offense than this New Orleans team, who has scored 91 total points in their opening two games. Lisi guy, first 8 offensive possessions against the porous Panthers, who we'll talk about in a little bit in week number one. 8 scoring drives, 5 touchdowns, 3 field goals. Yesterday in Dallas, a touchdown on each of their first 6 possessions, including 4 for Alvin Kamara. 3 on the ground, 1 receiving. The Saints now 13-1 to win the NFC, 5th best price. Let's go to their divisional mate in Tampa. Lisey, we talked about this spread on Friday. Felt a little bit large. North of a touchdown in favor of the Lions, albeit at home in this playoff rematch against the Buccaneers team, who looked great in week number 1 at home in Tampa. And it turned out that was the case, not just covering a number, but winning outright. Baker Mayfield, 11-yard rushing score in the final minute of the third quarter. The last points we saw in that game. The Bucs win outright in the Motor City as a 7.5-point underdog, 20-16.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, important to note how they won it, right? In regards to a lower scoring game where they didn't have to outscore their opponent in regards to a shootout, right? And that's the biggest thing, I think, when you look at big picture. For them to contain Jared Goff, the rushing attack of Jahmyr Gibbs and Montgomery, for the most part, hold them under 20 points at home, that was a dominant effort. And if they can continue that with Todd Bowles, now you have something. Think about Tampa Bay at the start. They were 42-1 to win the NFC in the offseason.
Yeah.
It trickled down to like 35-1 right before week 1. Last week, they were 26-1. Now they're 2-0, Ben. I mean, they won the division the last 3 years in a row. They're in the front-running, you know, pace with New Orleans now. I don't see any reason why they can't be a contender or a dark horse the way Detroit was last year.
At least to provide you some value, 16-1 is that number. The Saints now the favorites in the NFC South, plus 125. The Buccaneers, the second best price, plus 175. The Falcons, who were a minus 140 divisional odds on favorite entering the year, now that third best number. We'll see what Atlanta has to end out week 2 on Monday night in Philadelphia, but plus 280 for the Falcons. Joe, when you look at that game, too, in Detroit, highest total of the weekend, 51.5, it stays well under. Both teams did not score a single point in the fourth quarter. Really good out of the Buccaneers to start. They're 2-0 against the spread as the short favorite week 1 against Washington on the road, winning outright as more than a touchdown underdog in Detroit. The Buccaneers last year, 9-4 against the spread as a dog, 6 outright victories, off to a good start this season. The team that stinks the most in that division, it's the Carolina Panthers. Lisey, I don't know what to make of the Panthers at this point, but after they fell in a big way in the home opener against the Chargers, LA winning 26-3, Jim Harbaugh and the Bolts off to a perfect 2-0 start, both straight up and against the spread. I don't know how you resurrect this franchise, and you're starting to already question, 18 games into his NFL career, the future of Bryce Young. 84 yards yesterday against LA. The 11th time in his last 12 games he has thrown for less than 200. He didn't even get to the century mark yesterday against the Chargers.
Yeah, and he averaged 3.2 yards per throw. Now, that wasn't per rush. That was per throw. Everything was short to intermediate. I mean, that is the problem with Bryce Young. They're not getting chunk plays, whether it be the calls in regards to Dave Canales or Bryce Young's inability to read coverage and throw the football down the field to locate, you know, the open receiver in the passing tree, whether he doesn't have the confidence, whether he doesn't have the arm strength. It's clearly evident that he wasn't deserving in regards to the top overall selection. I'll say that right here, right now. I mean, he is clearly a different passer than what we saw in terms of his days in Tuscaloosa, where he threw 78 touchdown passes. You know, he completed well over 65% of his passes, 8,000 yards in 2 years, Ben. That is not the same guy. So he needs to get back on track. If they're an under 500 team by like mid-year, I think, honestly, you move away from Bryce Young and you have to make another assessment, pick a quarterback over the next couple of years.
I mean, they were the worst team in the NFL last season, 2-15. The silver lining of that is having an early draft pick, but because of the trade that they moved up to get Bryce Young in 2023, they gave away the number one overall selection to Chicago. Now, quickly for the Bolts, Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman told you what they were going to do. They were going to run the football. J.K. Dobbins, 17 carries for 131 yards. The first Charger player since LaDainian Tomlinson nearly 20 years ago to have back-to-back games with 130 yards on the ground. More FFC next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, we continue our review and recap of this weekend in the National Football League. So, Lisi guy, let's go to one of the marquee matchups of the weekend slate on a Sunday. In those afternoon hours in Arrowhead, it was the Chiefs and the Bengals. A game that came down to the final minute and the final offensive possession for Kansas City in this budding rivalry between the Bengals and the Chiefs. Of course, the game decided under a minute left, fourth and 16, as Patrick Mahomes rolls out to his left. The Chiefs down by two, 25-23, looks for Rashee Rice. As Rice goes up to get it, he is contacted before the ball gets there by the Bengals secondary member, Dejon Anthony. A pass interference flag is thrown. Listen, it's not great when in a critical moment of a game, the yellow laundry decides the outcome. But in my estimation, Lisi guy, frankly, it was the correct call. It allows Kansas City to extend its series and line up a 51-yard field goal as time expires for Harrison Butker that sails through the uprights. Kansas City wins 26-25 over Cincinnati. The Bengals do cover, though, as a 6.5-point dog.
Yeah, I mean, I go either way. I think it's a 50-50 call. I understand there was contact, right? But they always talk about the defensive back's ability and his – you know, he's deserving of the football, too. He's going through the receiver. It's a fourth down and 16. He did contact him with the body, but he's trying to make a play on the football. It's a similar call, Ben, to the call in the Tennessee game. No call against the Jets, right? The DB goes right through the wide receiver. Yeah. There's contact, and the refs obviously let it go. I mean, it's a judgment call, and I think that's the problem that we have. Was there contact? Yes, absolutely. But it's still a judgment call. It's never clear cut. And again, defensive backs still have an entitlement to the football in that type of situation. You know, we've seen Pat Mahomes and we've seen the Chiefs benefit on multiple calls, including the one in the Super Bowl with Juju Smith-Schuster. I think, you know, when you have a culmination of these calls that always seem to favor the Chiefs, that's where, you know, you get the public perception like, hey, you know, Pat Mahomes is switching jerseys with the refs, and that was the meme that came out this morning, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, you know, listen, Lisi guy, I think at any other point of the game that deserves to be called and is called, and that's really the metric of what we use for those decisions. Was it the right call? Yes. Does the timing of it suck? Also, yes, but by the letter of the law and really any PI call you are going to see, the defender has to go upright. He cannot go through the back of the receiver. It's going to lead to a pass interference flag. That's what we saw. KC takes advantage of the opportunity to start off 2-0. But the Bengals did cover, Joe, as a 6.5-point underdog. Depending on where you got the number, it was 5.5 early in the week, early on Sunday. Closed closer to a touchdown. You were one that here on the show on Friday said the Bengals were the right side. They would cover the number. Joe Burrow, pretty good yesterday against KC. A couple of touchdown tosses and more than 250 yards. Patrick Mahomes, not all that great. Are you more optimistic about what you see from Cincinnati after the result yesterday, albeit a loss, but a close one in Kansas City?
No, because of the circumstances around the Bengals. And again, this is their MO. They start slow each and every year, right? But the more times that it happens, and knowing how Ja'Marr Chase is feeling in regards to the current situation, he didn't score a touchdown yesterday, had a mediocre performance back-to-back weeks now. What does that say about the mindset of this team moving forward? And I am concerned now about the Bengals, because when you pick yourself out of a hole each and every year, it's harder and harder to gain momentum. And even though Burrow had a great game, or above average, right? 164 week one, 250 plus. His main target was Mike Gesicki in the tight ends, right? Yeah. I mean, you need a better effort out of Ja'Marr Chase and your number ones. That's a concern for me.
Yeah, for Jamar Chase, just four grabs on five targets for 35 yards. Mike Gesicki, the tight end in his first year in Cincy, 91 yards. The Bengals, after beating the Chiefs in the 2021 AFC Championship game and appearing in Super Bowl 56, have started their next 3 years winless 0-2 in their first two games. They have, each of the past two seasons, rattled off four wins in their next five to show a little bit of life. But Lisey Guy, given where the AFC North is, we'll talk about that in just a moment. The Bengals' price, actually, their win in the division got better, albeit after a loss yesterday, and their conference price went from 10-1 to 11-1. So not much negative movement. For the Chiefs, they are the short favorites to win the AFC at plus 250. But Lisey Guy, we got the news early on this Monday. Isaiah Pacheco, who had 90 yards on the ground to kind of spurn on that offense for KC, left the game early, exited in a walking boot and on crutches. The belief is it is a broken fibula that will more than likely sideline Isaiah Pacheco for a significant amount of time.
Yeah, and it's going to hurt the rushing attack, and you want that blue-collar player, runs hard, especially in terms of playoff situations, right? They do have Carson Steele, the rookie that is there, you know, another blue-collar type of running back that could be utilized out of the backfield. But again, now with the injury to Pacheco, and we see that Marquise Brown is on the IR, now all of a sudden those weapons are dissipating that we thought would be there, and there's no reemergence of Travis Kelce. Hopefully he'll reemerge at some point throughout the regular season, but that is now an added cause of concern as well for Kansas City moving forward, and we have to see how Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid adjust throughout the season, Ben.
One catch on three targets for only 5 yards for Kelce. Wanye Morris, the offensive lineman, had a touchdown in the same amount of catches as that of Travis Kelce. We'll get to the other big upsets from Sunday on the other side of the break. But Lisey Guy, I mentioned the AFC North. There's only one undefeated team. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers. They go into Denver. They win 13-6. They force two interceptions from Bo Nix. Justin Fields plays clean football once again. And the Steelers cover as a 3.5-point road favorite.
Give that guy the starting job already. He's deserving. 2-0. Two road wins. Big bad Bo Nix. Sort of looks like a deer in the headlights through 2 weeks.
Two INTs in each of his first two games. The Steelers, we make a lot about them being a great underdog under Mike Tomlin. 9-5 against the spread as a favorite since 2022 began. That was the end of the Big Ben tenure in the Steel City. More from Sunday next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
More and more upsets on Sunday of weekend number two of this NFL regular season. The biggest one, Joe, of the slate, the Las Vegas Raiders winning outright as an 8.5-point underdog in the Charm City against the Baltimore Ravens. We talked about this game on Friday. I asked you for the largest spread of the Sunday slate, 8.5 points in favor of the flock. Was it too many against the Raiders team that did not look great week one, now with permanent head coach Antonio Pierce, but last year the 9 games with interim head coach Antonio Pierce were great at covering numbers. You said, yeah, far too many points, and not just to keep the game closer than expected, but the Raiders went outright 26-23.
Yeah, I think the Raiders, and I'll keep saying it, I took them plus 320 to make the playoffs this year. I still believe they're potentially the second-best team behind the Kansas City Chiefs in regards to the AFC West, even though they lost to the Chargers in week number one. And they're a very good road team. I think people forget they went into Arrowhead last year as an 11-12-point underdog and won the ball game outright. And we know that Gardner Minshew last year, as a member of the Colts, knocked off who? Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens as what? A 6.5, 8.5-point dog last year. So again, he wasn't going to be fearful in regards to going and facing Baltimore. I just do not believe, and I said it after the week one matchup against Kansas City, Ben, that I do not believe they still put enough weapons around Lamar Jackson. Zay Flowers is good. He's not elite. and Isaiah Likely and the tight ends cannot be your deep threat down the field. You want to throw underneath and target them, that's fine. But you need speed on the perimeter, and it's unfortunate. It's the same old thing with the Baltimore Ravens. They're not going to go to an AFC championship and win it unless they change that.
And you know what's interesting, though, Lisey Guy? Yesterday should have been the recipe for Baltimore to not care about their downfield passing attack. They had multiple 10-point leads in the second half, and after a Derrick Henry 3-yard touchdown run early in the fourth, they led by 10. It seemed as though they might cover as that 8.5-point favorite, the largest of the weekend. But then that's when the Raiders responded. They kicked a field goal to make it a one-possession game. They scored a touchdown to come all the way back. And the Ravens, in response to the two scoring drives from Las Vegas in the fourth quarter, went 3-and-out right after it. Daniel Carlson, 38-yard field goal, less than half a minute remaining in the Charm City, gives Antonio Pierce as the permanent head man in the desert his first victory. Under him now, Joe, 9 games of the interim, 2 so far this year. That's 11 in total, 8-2-1 against the number. Pay attention to Las Vegas. Davante Adams, 9 grabs, 110 yards, a touchdown. Brock Bowers, 9 grabs and 98 yards for the rookie tight end for Las Vegas. Lisey Guy, that means in each of the first 2 weeks, the largest spread of the entire 16-game slate, the team that was the underdog won outright. The Patriots in Cincy, week 1. The Raiders in Baltimore, week 2. How about those Minnesota Vikings? The best record in the NFC North, off to a 2-0 start with Sam Darnold at the quarterback spot. No Christian McCaffrey, placed on injured reserve by San Francisco over the weekend. So the line was only about 4 points by the time we got to kick yesterday in Minneapolis in favor of the 49ers. But Minnesota wins outright 23-17. Sam Darnold again, 2 touchdown passes, a 97-yard bomb from his own end zone into the welcoming arms of Justin Jefferson. The Vikes off to a 2-0 start.
Yeah, now, you know, this could have went either way, right? These teams played last year. San Francisco lost. That was the game that Kirk Cousins stepped up. Huge performance. And Sam Darnold knew the defense, right? Because the second backup to Brock Purdy. But I actually, because they lost last year, I thought San Francisco would be focused heading into this matchup. You know, sometimes a new landscape helps. Sam Darnold is now a veteran in the league. He has potentially the best playmaker at the wide receiver position in Justin Jefferson. And again, he's a more confident quarterback than his days in New York. It's just clearly evident. He really fits this type of scheme. He has weapons around him, and they have a competent rushing attack with Ty Chandler and Aaron Jones. As long as you have that, Ben, you know, he can make some plays. He's not going to throw for 350 every week, but as long as he limits turnovers, they can win there. And again, maybe you change the assessment. They're over-exceeding things right now. They have the ability to be a potential 10 or 11 win football team this year.
There's no doubt about it, Lisey Guy. It is what they have been able to do. Minnesota is looking really good. And this came with Aaron Jones fumbling basically as he was about to run into the end zone. And the Vikings still able to turn Brock Purdy over twice. He threw for 319 yards, but they picked him off and they forced a fumble as well. More from the Sunday slate, more upsets, more underdogs triumphing next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We're live here on Football Full Circle. We continue our recaps from Sunday and week number 2. Lisi Guy, let's stay in the NFC North. A team also an underdog at home yesterday gets an outright victory. That's the Green Bay Packers. Malik Willis, in his fourth career start, gets a win for Green Bay, his first with the Pack. He signed with Green Bay, or was acquired, I should say, just over 3 weeks ago. You look at the numbers. Malik Willis, who had made 3 starts in his rookie year in Tennessee, did not throw a touchdown in those 3 starts or throughout his time with the Titans. Those his first career NFL touchdown yesterday, 12 of 14 for a buck 22, and Green Bay put up 261 yards on the ground, 53 attempts as a team, including 32 carries for Josh Jacobs. They went outright 16-10 as that three-point dog against the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, and I thought that would happen. You know, I thought we would get a heavy dose of Josh Jacobs. We saw the physicality of the offensive line, and as good as Malik Willis was, again, played within the scheme. That game was won or lost in the trenches because of Green Bay's ability to ground and pound against the front seven. So they limited possessions by Anthony Richardson. They played clean football. And I said this, you know, we had it on Pro Football Today, Ben. Are you panicked about the Green Bay Packers? I said, absolutely not, because of the playmakers that they have and their ability to run the football with Jacobs, coupled with the fact that you have a division that's potentially up for grabs. Caleb is a rookie. Looks like a deer in the headlights in regards to that production. Sam Darnold, can he maintain the consistency for 17 weeks? Most likely not, in regards to, you know, going 16-17-0. So you have a shot. And again, all you have to do is win a few of these games until Jordan Love comes back. They're going to be just fine, I think.
Yeah, listen, Lisey, I think it's hard to argue the point right now for that team. Frankly, it's been really good for Green Bay. And if you can run the football like this with Malik Willis, we'll see how it continues as Jordan Love at least probably misses another game or two. Maybe the calling card is now out. You see it on the ground for Green Bay. On the other side, though, for Anthony Richardson, right? We have said this is his de facto rookie season. They did score a touchdown under 2 minutes remaining. He found Alec Pierce in the end zone. He did throw one additional interception on what would have been a Hail Mary-type play at the very end of the game. But outside of that, still two INTs, three interceptions in total, 17 of 34 for only 204 yards. It was not a great display for AR in what is really his de facto rookie campaign.
Yeah, and let's call it what it is, right? When he was in Gainesville, he only completed 57% of his passes. He struggled with consistency, but he had the physical attributes to play on the next level. So you're going to get these high highs. You're also going to get these low lows when he tries to force balls and he can't read coverage too well, right? That's what he needs to develop. He needs to sit in the pocket, locate, hey, the guy's covered and checked out. He's a work in progress, and that's what it'll take. It's unfortunate because they had that team at such a high level at the end of the year with Gardner Minshew that, you know, the expectation is, oh, let's take off from that. But, you know, I think right there, Ben, you're going to get these games where they put up 10 points and you're going to get other games where they put up 27 like week one. And that's why I think we're looking at probably a 500 football team or an 8-9 team at best this season.
A de facto rookie in Anthony Richardson, the rookie of the year last year on the offensive side, C.J. Stroud, facing the number one overall pick in Caleb Williams on Sunday night. Not exactly a high-scoring affair. The Texans win 19-13. Chicago closed as a 6.5-point underdog, so they do get the cover. The hook giveth and it taketh. More of the same from C.J. Stroud. Strong, solid, consistent. 260 yards, a touchdown, no turnovers. For Caleb Williams, he continues to look like a rookie. 23 of 37, 174 yards. Not a touchdown pass so far in his NFL career in two games and two interceptions. But it's not all on him, Joe. That offensive line, bigger holes than Swiss cheese. 7 sacks allowed yesterday to Houston. Some concern in Chicago, to say the least.
I said this, and I'll say it again. Offense looked better last year with Justin Fields. Where's everybody now? I continue to say it. They rushed the ball for 3.2 yards per rush last night. You know, that was a terrible effort. They were in predictable third downs. And again, Caleb Williams, no chunk plays. Right. The difference between Justin Fields and Caleb Williams, all the gurus told us, wait until you see the explosiveness of this offense. I'm still waiting. And I'll still say it again, even though he's not calling the plays, Matt Eberflus doesn't want to play that way. He's got his reach on this team and he wants to dink and dunk and rely on defenses. And you could do that in some games against an elite offense like C.J. Stroud. They'll just find their way to beat you, and that's what they did last night.
I mean, there was no rushing attack for Chicago either to help the young rookie quarterback. 22 carries for 71 yards, and Caleb was the leading rusher, 44 yards on the ground. That's what happens when you're running for your life often. DeAndre Swift, 14 carries for 18 yards. A tough start for the Bears, who are technically 2-0 against the spread, but the Houston Texans are 2-0 straight up. Now, Joe, we've got co-favorites to win NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year, C.J. Stroud and Jaden Daniels, who has not thrown a touchdown pass yet in his career, did rush for two week one. Washington did not score a touchdown week two at home, and they beat the New York Giants 21-8. History made by the G-Men. They become the first team in NFL history to score three or more touchdowns in a single game, to not allow a single touchdown in the same game, and lose in a regular season contest in regulation. It was because of the kicking woes. Graham Gano injured his hamstring on the opening kickoff. Jamie Gillen, the punter, tried a PAT on the Giants' first touchdown. It missed. They tried two-point conversions after. Missed both of those. Austin Seibert, who was signed by Washington midweek last week, made all seven field goals. Washington wins 21-8 as a slight 1.5-point home favorite.
Yeah, this was one of my best bets for the day. I like the over, and I did like Washington. The over hurt me yesterday, you know, with the kicker. I'll just say this in regards to Jaden Daniels. They're slowly implementing the offensive scheme. You could see it. It started in the second half against the Tampa Bay Bucs in the loss. It continued yesterday. He looked like a more confident quarterback. He was checking down. When the game was on the line, too, Ben, 18 up, Jaden Daniels steps up. He finds Noah Brown in regards to a huge play over the middle, wide open, and then all of a sudden makes the run to put them into field goal range. That's what you want to see. You know, forget the touchdowns. They still, and I'll say this, the reason why they did not score touchdowns in the red zone, multiple penalties. How many full starts can you potentially have? Costa, Cosme, whatever his name was. Six of them I counted. These guys are like ridiculous. Cost me the over. But the other thing, too, that I want to make. Yeah, Daniel Jones stepped up. But Brian Daboll coached that game like he had the kicker and Washington didn't. They weren't aggressive. You have no kicker, man. What are you doing? They were trying to kick a field goal, it seemed like, at the end.
Lisi, organizational mispractice, malpractice by the New York Giants. They had an open roster spot, knowing that Graham Gano got banged up in the season opener, and yet they did not add a kicker as insurance throughout the week. And sure enough, Graham Gano probably wasn't even healthy enough to do the opening kickoff, and he got injured. And that's why the Giants are 0-2, and that's why the Giants have started 0-2 in 10 of the last 12 NFL seasons. Listen, man, I know Brian Daboll wasn't the guy who was there when they drafted Daniel Jones. I know Joe Shane wasn't the GM there when they drafted Daniel Jones. If they don't turn things around quickly, it's going to get ugly very, very soon. We'll talk about the other New York team, Aaron Rodgers and the Jets getting a victory on Sunday. An ugly game in Jacksonville and another contender for the Offensive Rookie of the Year award. Marvin Harrison Jr. has arrived. All of that and a preview of Monday Night Football up next on FFC here on Sports Grid Radio.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
I'm right here on Football Full Circle. It is FFC, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. He is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. Aaron Rodgers, in his first fully completed game, gets a victory in that first fully completed game, although he did complete week number one. What I meant to say, his first win in a fully completed game, the Jets on the road in Nashville, 24-17, covering as a 3.5-point favorite against the Titans. There's the good. That's the young running backs for the Jets, Breece Hall and Braylon Allen, both a receiving touchdown. Aaron Rodgers did enough in the game. Braylon Allen, two scores at 20 years and 239 days old. The youngest player in NFL history to have two scrimmage touchdowns in the same game. And then there's the bad. Will Levis on the other side, 192 yards, a touchdown, an interception, and a fumble that was so bad early in the second quarter, it left his new head coach, Brian Callahan, saying, "What the F are you doing, Will?" They were up 7-0 early in the second, inside the Jets' 10-yard line, and as he's getting sacked, he pitches the ball behind him, I guess. It was recovered by the Jets, and the Titans never could recover. Big victory for New York, Joe.
Yeah, but he drinks mayo in his coffee. He's got to be a first-round draft pick. That's what they were saying to us coming out of Kentucky. The turnover issues need to be cleaned up. I wasn't that impressed with the Jets' offense. You know, obviously, Braylon Allen, I think, is going to be a gamer. He could potentially be a Rookie of the Year candidate, especially his ability to catch the football out of the backfield. From a running back perspective, they're going to need the rushing attack of Braylon Allen and Breece Hall to take the pressure off for Aaron Rodgers. He's still not going deep in regards to the passes. They're methodically working down the field. That's good against some teams. It's not good against the better teams in regards to the AFC that they're going to have to go up against. And again, you know, in the end, they made a play on a fourth and goal where you could have made the questionable call. It could have been PI. And maybe we're talking about, you know, the Jets starting 0-2, but they gutted it out. Credit Salah and the team. They found a way to get it. But I'm still not sold on the Jets' big picture, Ben. That was an ugly win.
Yeah, it was an ugly win. There's no doubt about it. But they still do get that victory, the defense tightening up in the second half. As we go elsewhere around the NFL, Joe, overtime needed in Foxborough. Seattle does get the victory, though, over the Patriots, 23-20. The Pats were a three-point home underdog. They get a push. New England more competitive than we expected early, 1-0-1. Against the spread, the Seahawks do start 2-0. That's really our slate around the NFL. Oh, one more game in Jacksonville. Ugly game as well. Cleveland wins 18-13 against the Jags. Cleveland wins outright as a three-point underdog. Deshaun, not great. Trevor Lawrence, probably even worse. 18 of 34. No touchdowns, only 220 yards. A Jacksonville team, Joe, that was blanked in the second half against Miami week one, only able to muster up 13 points at Trevor Bank Stadium in the home debut.
Yeah, and I think you have concerns now with Jacksonville. You know why? Because this team started 8-3 last year. They ended 1-5. They lose two very close ball games that they could have won. The rushing attack is there for the most part. And Trevor Lawrence doesn't look like the same quarterback, clearly. You know, he has the weapons. He loses Calvin Ridley, but you put Brian Thomas in regards to that offense. Christian Kirk is there. Ingram missed that game yesterday. But you got to do better than 13 points. Trevor Lawrence is ineffective. You know, again, 220 yards. This is a guy, would they pay him $53 million a year? You need a better
55,
effort.
55, Joe.
55. You're supposed to put up touchdowns, guy. You know, last year he had the ankle injury. There's no excuse anymore. And here's the other thing. You know, I hate to say it, but I really thought Doug Peterson was the coach to turn around this program. It looked like that in regards to getting them to a playoff win. That was 2 years ago. They've regressed since that win, Ben.
Yeah, big time. Big time, Joe. There's no doubt about it. They were 8-3 to start last year. Injuries started to creep up on Trevor Lawrence. They dropped five of their final six to end out the regular season and miss a golden opportunity to go back-to-back in the AFC South. They're 0-2 so far this year. Did not cover as a home favorite against Cleveland on Sunday. Did get the cover by a hook on the road as an underdog, but would have lost that second half line, no doubt about it, against the Finns. Week two comes to a close tonight, Joe, on a Monday in Philadelphia. It's the Eagles and the Falcons. Philly, 5.5-point home favorite against Kirk Cousins and Atlanta. Total 45.5 working its way down. How do you see this Monday night finale?
Yeah, I can only look to Jalen Hurts and the Eagles playing at home. I think we do get a lower scoring game because I'm not sure what you're going to get out of Kirk Cousins on the road, especially in primetime. Look for Dallas Goedert to step up. Hurts is, I believe, now even money to score a touchdown. I like that with Barkley the favorite. Yeah. But Dallas Goedert over his total, especially with A.J. Brown out of the lineup. Keep an eye out for the tight end.
43.5 is that receiving yards prop for Dallas Goedert. As Joe just mentioned, A.J. Brown out for tonight. That has already been determined. Joe, on the injury side for Atlanta, Kirk Cousins is healthy enough to play. It's not that he's going to miss week two, But how healthy is the 36-year-old veteran quarterback coming off a torn Achilles that he suffered in the eighth game last year against Minnesota? It's different than the 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers, who was on display last week on Monday Night Football, who played only four offensive snaps. Kirk played nearly half the season for Minnesota a year ago. He did not look good in his Atlanta debut, 16 of 26 last week against the Steelers for a $1.55, a touchdown to Kyle Pitts. Okay, but two interceptions, including Joe, a costly INT. Under 3 minutes remaining, Atlanta was in Pittsburgh territory, down by five, looking for that go-ahead score. He throws the interception. Tons of pressure from the Steelers last week. The Dirty Birds only score 10 points. I feel like my Leesy brain is on. I wanted to circle Atlanta this year with the offseason acquisitions of being one of those top-scoring teams in the NFL. I think I'm going to go contrarian and go over 45 and a half tonight. Again, it's like the Leesy algo's pumping through.
No, it wouldn't shock me, right? Would they give up 24 in regards to the week one matchup against Green Bay? I will say Bijan Robinson has to be a factor to take the pressure off of Kirk Cousins tonight. Receiving and rushing are both on the table for Robinson.
We'll talk both the talented duo backs on either side. Saquon Barkley, three touchdowns in his Philly debut in Sao Paulo. Bijan Robinson, more than 110 scrimmage yards, but did not find pay dirt. And a couple of college football news and notes on the other side of the break as well. Next on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Leesy and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on FFC, we round out with a couple of thoughts on Monday Night Football to close and some college football conversation. Leesy guy, a lot of focus on the quarterback comparison. Kirk Cousins, 224.5. Jalen Hurts, 229 in a hook in their passing yards props. But there will be a focus as well on the guys next to them in the backfield. Saquon Barkley for Philadelphia, sensational in his Birds debut, and the youngster Bijan Robinson. Let's look at those rushing plus receiving yards props that we have for Monday night. For Bijan Robinson, that number, 101 and a hook. Saquon Barkley at 99.5. Both guys over these numbers in week one. Saquon, 132 scrimmage yards in three total touchdowns, two on the ground, one as a receiving score in Sao Paulo against Green Bay. Bijan Robinson did not score, but had 111 scrimmage yards over that prop. Which guy are you looking at, Leesy guy?
It's going to be Bijan because, again, we know about how Jalen Hurts can tuck it and run it as well. I think that's an added factor that maybe he can utilize in regards to this matchup. So maybe it's not as much in regards to Saquon, running the football. Maybe he gets utilized more in the passing attack. Did have the touchdown against Green Bay. I think the catalyst for Atlanta has to be Bijan, again, because I'm not sold on Kirk. And we know about how bad he is on primetime. Right. I mean, there is no offensive continuity right now. What is the identity? Do they want to throw it? Do they want to run it? Everybody thought that, you know, with Kirk Cousins in that lineup, Ben, it was just going to look like the Minnesota offense. Problem is that, you know, Drake London and Kyle Pitts aren't Justin Jefferson, you know, and all those playmakers. He had an above average tight end with Hawkinson as well. So, again, I need to see it. The best player for Atlanta is Bijan Robinson. Arthur Smith didn't utilize him. They need to feed him the football the way at least they fed Saquon on the other side in week one.
Minus 175 is Saquon's number to find pay dirt. He did that three times in the Brazilian opener. Bijan Robinson did not score, still juiced at minus 115. Bijan only one receiving touchdown. That's it. In the final four games for the Falcons last year, just eight total touchdowns, four on the ground, four through the air in 2023. I think that needs to be on the uptick tonight, especially if my over is going to come through. Leesy guys, some college football news, of course, from the weekend that was. We have a change at the top of the AP poll. Texas now ranked number one for the first time since 2008. Georgia falls to number two. Did UGA lose? No, They won for a 15th consecutive time in Lexington against Kentucky. They have beaten the Cats for 15 straight years dating back to 2009, but they came nowhere close to covering as a 21.5-point road favorite, holding on to win 13-12.
Yeah, and they trailed that game, what, 9-3, I believe, in regards to that matchup early in the third quarter at half. We talked about it. Last five meetings now in Lexington, no matter who the quarterback is, the team, Georgia typically struggles and just grinds out victories over the Wildcats. It's okay that they fall to number two. They play Alabama in a couple of weeks. They're going to play Texas in the early part of October. That'll set aside. They need to get back to basics, and they need Carson Beck to get back to throwing 300-yard games. If he could do that, they're going to be just fine. I think that defense, too, played lights out.
Yeah, they certainly did. The defense is going to be good. Carson Beck, less than 200. And we saw Kirby Smart really ticked off on Saturday night. I think Georgia comes back with a focus. Texas absolutely hammering UTSA 56-7. But Quinn Ewers, Joe, listed as week-to-week now, was injured in the opening half with what Texas is calling an abdomen strain. Because of that, we saw Arch Manning, who had five total touchdowns in the game, more than 220 yards, four touchdown tosses, and a rushing score 67 yards down the field in Austin. The wheels of his grandfather, Archie, far superior to the wheels of his uncles, Peyton and Eli.
Yeah, I mean, here we go now. This is going to be the story, you know, that Texas, do you start Quinn? Do you start Arch? You know, who's going to be ready for that Georgia game? And here's the other, I saw this, they're tweeting out, Arch Manning ran 20.7 miles an hour, right?
Yeah
Tyreek, 20.3. Yeah. I'll take that back.
Right.
Yeah, if he's faster than Tyreek, there's a problem. Then he's the fastest man in the NFL already, and he's not even there. Please, we're starting to pump this up now. 20.7 miles an hour. Come on, Ben, come on. No way is he faster than Cheetah. No way.
Well, I wonder when we will see Quinn Ewers. He has moved back from the Heisman favorite entering week three at a 5-1 number, 22-1. Arch Manning now at 25-1, only $3 behind the starting quarterback in Austin. Texas has Mississippi State next week, ULM this upcoming weekend. That does it for Football Full Circle. We'll see you tomorrow, noon Eastern.